We like Seneca. Londinium likes Seneca. It's a play about revenge. Not entirely about revenge, entirely about revenge on Nero, but that's okay. We enjoy it. It was the end of the Julian-Claudian reign, the introduction of the Flavian. We're living with the sad end of the Flavian and try not to think about it. Instead, we think about the autocracy that we're living in, otherwise known as the emperor's empire, the one that Augustus built. Conversation with a distinguished ambassador and policymaker for the Obama administration, Michael McFaul, professor at Stanford. He has a new book out called Autocracy Versus Democracy. And in it, he and his colleagues at the Freeman Spogli Institute hypothesis, Germanicus, that democracy is in a recession and that autocracy is now in full flower and being chosen as someone you must deal with and even are attracted to if you're the leader of a smaller state. How do you see it? Is democracy in recession? Is autocracy on the rise?
Well, democracy is in recession. And it's in recession because of people like Michael McFaul. What Blue did during the Biden administration was set up a false narrative of misdirection. So they pursued a course of many steps, each of which was stripping the nation of its Republican character. And doing so directly by trying to attack the Second Amendment unsuccessfully, but going directly after the First Amendment. And the effort to control media and censor is part of a creeping authoritarianism on the part of government. And you see that in full flower in the United Kingdom today. And you have a two-tier justice system, you know, two-tier keir. You have not just censorship, but you have essentially thought crimes being pursued. For example, a person silently praying outside an abortion clinic is grounds for arrest and imprisonment. I find this shift important, and it's a shift that is occurring across the European Union, but also in the United States. And Blue is directly focused on a course that would not lead to autocracy in the sense of an emperor czar, but rather a kind of brutal oligarchy, the kind you would see in city-states like Venice, for example, or Sparta. Well, Sparta had a king, but I mean, you'd have a very tough kind of control by a ruling class. And to me, that is not democracy. And democracy, in any event, is the wrong word to use. You want to have a working representative government that is at the heart of a republic, and we do not have that today.
We don't have it, but the question is, are the autocrats attractive to our allies and our client states more than they're attracted to us? Are Chinese capitalism with Chinese characteristics or the Russian state with military at the frontier, is that attractive to our allies?
No, it's attractive to some. Obviously, Brazil, the BRICS, which have been expanding, there is a sense that China and to an extent Russia, of course, in the last several years, provide a better model for the development and progress of a society. I mean, China has been pushing that a lot. It's a hard sell, but looking at the United States, which frankly has ruined its reputation in series of you know, foreign entanglements since 2001, which has resulted in the deaths of several millions of people. And the world doesn't really like that. And, you know, what Russia and China have is the old tradition of the Soviet Union. And of course, China is still the CCP, right? So they can say that we've always pursued the welfare of the people. And no, we're not a democracy, but we are more mindful of the overall welfare of all the people. Whereas neoliberalism now is benefits only the very wealthy. And of course, the reality bears that out. We've now reached a point where Americans, and especially people like, shall I call him Ambassador McFaul, have to argue that, and they refuse to. I mean, the shift in the gap in wealth and income, the inequality thereof, is devastating. It's like France right before the revolution, the ancien regime, and it can't continue on that basis. And blue policies are determined to continue to pursue that. You know, to reduce the American working class. It's already declined from a middle class to a working class, down to a gig economy that has to compete against a flood of unregulated migrants, which was what was a cornerstone of the Biden administration.
It's the year 2025. It's the year 2125. Are we a democracy republic, or are we an autocracy empire? 100 years from now.
Yeah, I think we're potentially, there's a high potential that we're an oligarchic autocracy. Mm-hmm. And an empire that it takes the form of an expanded trans-Pacific and transatlantic bloc, which is in competition still with a Eurasian bloc. And the competition is for the influence over others who aren't part of either of those two blocks. That is a path that is highly possible. And to retain the American Republic, it would require smarter Americans, and Americans are less and less well-educated and more illiterate, and a civically minded American population would have to be able to understand what a republic entails and would have to be willing to defend it. And I think that's going to be the hardest road to successfully go down.
I agree with you. I agree that autocracy is the trend of the age for the next century.
The technology supports it too.
Yes.
I mean, it's not like Orwell, where he had clunky technology that he did his best to imagine in the future. We have the technologies so that our thoughts even can be tracked.
Yes.
Everything we do, everything we spend, everything we say, that's an enormously powerful instrument, and everyone who's in power loves it.
And so the moralizing about dictators, will that go away because it's tedious?
Oh, the moralizing won't go away because it'll be necessary to keep a quiet and passive population. I won't even call it a society. And to do so, there'll have to be constant remonstrance about democracy and saving it.
Right.
Constant, censorship is called protecting people from misinformation. I mean, it's very Orwellian, but if Orwell works, and it works a lot better and a lot smoother than it did, say, in the novel, then how can that, people love it. And I know, I've been in Washington my entire career, and people who call themselves liberal are the most illiberal people I've ever met in my life.
Well, let us not defend liberalism then. I don't want to be in the way of this train coming down the track. let us just say that it was a part of the transformation from kingship to democracy to autocracy, where we're headed. Germanicus and Gaius are off to sacrifice to the great god Augustus, who built a very, very, very sophisticated empire, and we're living in it, and we're glad for it. Maybe only once, maybe it can't come again. Maybe America is not living up to Augustus's standards. And then we're going on to the theater. For the third week in a row, we're going to have another Seneca play, or a piece of a Seneca play. The theme of Seneca, it was a philosopher executed by Nero. Nero didn't have reasons for killing off his family and friends. He just did it until he killed himself. And in any event, Seneca lived the fantasy life of a revenge. And so each of his plays sets up an opportunity for the anti-hero to be dripping in blood at the end. And we get, in the third week in a row, I'm expecting large laughter from the theater audience. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. We're thanking you very much for listening in. The Centurions are now going on home, as they should. And we will look for you next week when we have more doubts about the present course in Ukraine, in Europe, and especially in Washington. I'm John Batchelor.